Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets with Tim McMaster, Zach Rosenblatt, and Marissa Dunn.
Can't wait!
Welcome back to the Can't Wait podcast. We hope everyone enjoyed a weekend of football action without the stress of the Jets playing. It was a big weekend for bad teams. Four teams that had one loss entering week seven came out of it with a win. I'm Tim McMaster along with the Athletics Jets reporter Zach Rosenblatt. Thanks for checking out the podcast. We're happy to have you here, whether you're watching us live or you're listening to it after the fact. If you're watching us live, we didn't have the fun intro music because, man, we need Marissa back as soon as possible. I used the wrong StreamYard account.
So many buttons, you know?
It's a disaster, but we are doing a mailbag today, and I got all the mailbag questions from Twitter loaded in as banners, so...
Yeah, and send some questions in the chat, so too, and we'll hit you guys, too.
Yeah, we'll take some from the chat as well. Hit the thumbs up sign. Subscribe if you haven't already on YouTube and also on the audio version. And tell your friends about the Can't Wait podcast. Fun show today. Will Parkinson, host of Turn on the Jets, is back. We had him on last year. I don't know if this is his third or second time.
I feel like it's second or third, yeah. He's friend of the pod at this point.
We love when Will comes on, so he'll be here as well. Before we bring in Will, though, Zach, how was your bye week?
We were talking about this a little before the show. Most years I would go on a trip during the bye week, and it always winds up being a bad decision because I need that week to rest, and I would wind up going to New Orleans or something where you're not sleeping at all. So this trip, I stayed in my apartment. I saw a couple movies by myself in the middle of the day, which is one of my low key favorite activities to do. It's I'm an old woman, just going with her friends, except I go by myself to see a movie in the middle of the day when it's the cheapest. Saw a couple horror movies because it's horror movie season and Samantha does not like horror movies. So if I'm going to see them, I have to watch them alone. And one night I went out in the city, with another Jets reporter, not named Connor. Get some food at this place called Golden Diner, which makes the best pancakes I've ever had. And we watched some Phillies baseball. And Saturday, we made a last second decision to go see John Mayer in Long Island. So I saw him for the second time in a month. And it was a great show. Set list was amazing. So I had a nice chill week, but making a lot of food, just trying to, relax, unwind before the craziness of the second half of the Jet season comes, because as we know, nothing ever normal is around here. That was the most normal bye week we've ever had probably around here.
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, Mecole Hardman got traded and he got traded. I guess timing was okay. So I parked at the movie theater, see the tweet that he got traded, double check, make sure it's real. I have to write something on my phone and I walk in as the trailers are happening. Luckily I didn't miss any of the movie I was seeing, but so that pretty low key bye week, frankly, and I'll take it. A lot of stuff coming. I mean, this week should be fun, Snoopy Bowl. But I'm recharged and ready for the second half of the season. It was pretty clutch.
I had my greatest regular season fantasy football win of all time. I was down 60 points after Sunday's games. The CBS Fantasy actually said that the other guy had a 100% chance of winning, not 99.9, 100% chance of winning. Monday night, I had Kirk Cousins and Jordan Addison playing. They put up 63 points. I won by 2 points. People are saying, why is Kirk Cousins your quarterback? Plenty of fair questions. We've been rattled by injuries on the team. But all-time great regular season.
There you go. Win. That's big.
All right. With that, let's move on to the Jets, and let's welcome in Will Parkinson. Hey, Will, man. How you doing?
Good, guys. Excited to be back on.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Since you were last here, you were married.
Yeah, I got married, you know, took the plunge and, you know, she's been at every Jets game this year. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, she's all in. Got her some nice good apparel. She used to be a Giants fan back in the day.
You converted her.
She is all in.
That's true love. Wow.
Bruised her hand, punching the railing.
It's kind of messed up of you to turn somebody into a Jets fan that wasn't before.
Although Giants fandom, right? Yeah, true.
I was going to say the future kids are going to be Jets fans no matter what. It was just a matter of
getting her on board.
And,
yeah,
as long as mom and dad both liked it, then that's the goal.
Hey, the home crowds have been pretty amazing this year so far.
Yeah, honestly. They've been nuts. I had Tyler Conklin last week on the pod. And he was saying like last year, it felt like the fans weren't kind of not sure how to react. They were like, are we good? Should we get excited? He's like, this year it's felt like everyone's all in. And even though obviously Rodgers goes down week one, four plays in, et cetera, like the fact that they won that game, I think everyone left that game going, I have no idea what the season's going to bring, but like this team's really good. And I think the fans have bought into that and in years past, feel like the Jets have barely been on prime time, obviously, for a long time. But when they have been, they just haven't played well. And this year, every big game, it feels like they've, for once, come up and raise their level of competition and or played the level of competition, whatever the saying is.
Or even played in a way that brought the other team down to them. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think that's something that gives fans hope. Like, oh, this is a big spot. We can get excited because we know they're not going to like crash and burn. Again, they haven't really played a lot of bad teams, and the bad teams they've played, they haven't looked as good. So,
yeah, that's a great point, honestly.
So hopefully, you know, that changes. But again, like, it's been exciting to be at MetLife every Sunday. The stadium's packed. Whether it's, you know, 100% Jets fans or not is a different question. But at least it's been exciting and a fun game to watch on Sundays and Mondays.
And they've had the three most watched like games in the league or something this season too.
Yeah, which is nuts.
Possibly Taylor Swift influenced, but
at least one of them. Yeah,
I remember week one texting Zach after the injury and being like, "How quiet is it in that place?" And he was like, "It's weird. It's still loud. Like people are still excited even after Rodgers went down." And I was like, "Wow, that's."
I think there was a lot of shock there too. Like. Did we see what we thought? We just saw like that kind of thing. Like
it was so.
We didn't know yet how serious it was. I guess.
Yeah. Well, even in stadium, like you were trying to check your phone, and like, you know, I have not ever seen MetLife like that, so it was impossible to get updates. And like, all you saw was you couldn't see any real injury, right? You're not seeing a slow mo replay of Rodgers and his calf vibrate or whatever. So all you saw was the cart, and you're like, all right, it said ruled out with an ankle. So I have no idea what's going on. And then, you know, obviously at halftime, you see the TVs are playing Schefter saying, like, the fear of, you know, fear of an Achilles. And you're like, all right, well, then they score that first drive. They go down. I think they made it 13-6 or whatever it was. And it was like, you know what? We're already here. You might as well scream your face off for the next 2 hours because we're going to sit 6 hours of traffic going home.
Yeah.
So when you think about the fan base right now and in bye weeks past, I feel like it's usually a chance to like just regroup and just prepare yourself for the inevitable bad second half of the season. But because of the way the first half, we'll say half pre-bye week season ended with the win over the Eagles, I feel like the fan base is as mentally stable as I ever remember it coming out of a bye week.
Yeah. They did win the Bills game before the bye week last year, I believe. Right. Wasn't that the time? Yeah.
Yeah, so. And they were six. Yeah, they were.
I don't know if they did. They win again? I don't even know if they won.
They won one more game.
One more game.
They were 6-3, right?
Right. Yeah. So you hope that was like the big storyline of the press conferences yesterday. It was asking about what gives them confidence they can do better this time. And honestly, like we've talked about it, this team feels very similar to last year's team. The main difference is Breece Hall is still around right now. And it is crazy in 2023 that a team is so reliant on a running back, and good timing going against the Giants, who are maybe the only other team, and them and like the Titans are like the teams that are most reliant on like their running back leading them, because without a quarterback, they need the running game to work. So it's a formula that like in theory, I don't see how it could work over a full season, but if they keep grinding out games like this against good teams, like they should in theory be better against the bad teams where the offense plays a little better. Not a lot of great teams left on the schedule. So, yeah, I mean, I think everybody should feel pretty good about where they're at, but also I think maybe don't get a little too – everybody's kind of talking about this team, including from the team, like they've already made it. Like they absolutely need to prove that they can still maintain – if they lose to the Giants this week, like it is very week to week around here, but if they lose to the Giants this week, then all the goodwill goes away right away. So.
Oh, yeah, very fast. Yeah.
No, it's a couple different things. I think the last 2 years it's been coming out of the bye. It's from the Patriots. The 2 years ago, obviously, they were not a good team. They get boat race. I think it was like 54-13 out of the bye against New England. That's obviously a team that's eons ago. But then last year they come out of the bye, and it just feels like the Patriots, that was kind of the game Zach Wilson basically lost his job, and it was kind of the beginning of the end. Obviously, Matt Milano ends their season by injuring Mike White later in the year. But I feel like this year it's the team is a lot around the team. The team was good last year, but I felt like this team is doing a lot of things that we kind of wanted them to do, and, you know, a little bit better. We wanted them to get Garrett Wilson more targets. He's getting the ball more, whether it's producing multitude of touchdowns or not is a different story, but it's Breece Hall. Garrett Wilson looks better this year. You know, Quincy and CJ both playing well at the same time. I think I saw before Quincy Williams on pace for like 170 tackles, six sacks, like four forced fumbles. It's some Madden, like Luke Kuechly numbers from like Madden and stuff when you were younger. And I also just think that the optimism is the AFC is not quite as good. You know, people wanted this team to be, I thought going into the year, they'd be a playoff team. Whether they were Super Bowl contender, we had to kind of wait and see. Obviously, they don't have Rodgers right now, but I think it's also the potential Rodgers is coming back, and it's like keeps getting hyped up a little bit more. It's like, hey, if we take care of business here, you know, there's three games in a row where I think the Jets should win all three of these games. Whether they do or not, obviously, is what you're mentioning. It's week to week, but there's a very real chance they're 6-3 going to that Bills game, and you're going, man, if we split here, like the division's still up for grabs, and we have the potential of maybe, even if it's not realistic, maybe Rodgers comes back. All of a sudden, you're like, wait, four plays into the season, we thought it was over, and now all of a sudden, every single thing we wanted to happen is still kind of in play. I think that's that optimism there. And then again, it's not that they're beating all these bad teams and they're still getting blown out by good teams. It's like they beat the Bills, they should have beat the Chiefs, they beat the Eagles. You know, I think that's where you feel like this team's, well, we talked about it a little bit before, but they're raising kind of the bar of, you expect them now to go up against anybody and have a good chance to win, because we've seen them beat the best of the best. So I think that's why there's the optimism. But again, I also think that AFC not being quite as good and beating up on each other a little bit, like Buffalo looks much more mortal. Miami hasn't beaten a good team in feels like 2 years. You know, obviously the AFC North's good, but week to week, the Browns defense was lauded as like even better than the Jets, and they gave up 7,000 yards to Gardner Minshew and Michael Pittman. So I think that's where a lot of this is coming from. And again, KC not looking, they're 6-1 and they're going to host, you know, probably the AFC title game. That said, obviously we've seen them kind of struggle, you know, through week to week. But again, there's a reason for optimism, but if you don't take care of business this week and the next couple weeks, everything kind of reverts back to panic mode.
Got to win the ones you're supposed to. All right. Injury front, before we get to the mailbag, Sauce and DJ Reed still in concussion protocol. Zach, is that just because they can leave them there right now, or is this legitimately a concern heading into the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I lean more towards they're just coming back. I mean, I saw Sauce Gardner was like flying to Vegas for some Twitch convention or something, so I can't imagine he'd be cleared to fly if yeah, that's a sentence. Yeah, I had to say out loud in 2023. I'll be concerned if Wednesday we get to Wednesday and they haven't been cleared to return yet, especially DJ, because he's been on protocol longer. I realize why everybody panicked. I think Salah could have clarified maybe a little better, but he doesn't really like talking about injuries and
only in a positive light.
Yeah, only a positive way, which usually it's gotten kind of funny at this point to me. Anytime I tweet like a positive injury update from Salah, like I tweeted about Joe Tippmann, who you're going to ask about.
Yeah, Joe Tippmann is a quick healer, according to
Salah. So I had people saying, great, well, now Joe Tippmann's getting both his legs amputated. Oh, great, he's in a coma. Like, it's like the amount of every single reply, like immediately, and fans are just like so out on Salah's injury updates. Like, he's better off just like pulling the day ball and not saying anything, honestly. Like, for our sake, like, I don't know, it gives us something to write about when he gives hope for something and then the guy's out for 5 weeks. Yeah, I don't know. I based on how he reacted after the game, the Eagles game when Tippmann got hurt, I wasn't very confident coming out of that Tippmann would be playing again this year or for a while. But I don't know. We'll see if he doesn't practice this week, then I feel like we can safely, or if he gets put on IR on Saturday, which seems to be the day they do that stuff, then we'll know for sure. I'd be surprised if he played this week, certainly. And I would imagine a few weeks he'd be out, which is a big loss, which we've talked about. He was looking very, very good. Now that their depth on the interior is just like, if they get one more injury, they're screwed. They don't really even have any options that you would like. Billy Turner might be their top guard backup right now, and he's their top tackle backup technically. And they've Dennis Kelly on the practice squad. He's a veteran, but he's more of a tackle. Like, they have a couple of guys I had never heard of until I looked at the practice squad the other day that play guard. I don't know what the move is there. Anytime I do, you write about trades, fans are always like, they need a trade for an offensive lineman. Well, almost every team in the league needs offensive linemen, and teams that have them are not usually giving them up. So I wouldn't expect any like upgrades on the O-line, but their depth is absolutely a concern right now.
Yeah. It also doesn't feel like, cause Sauce and DJ Reed haven't practiced, like that's the reason, part of the reason, like if they don't practice, they can't clear that last hurdle of protocol. Like they have to go out on Wednesday and not, you know, Sauce can't be nauseous, and DJ Reed, you know, obviously that would be concerning though. If DJ Reed's not cleared by like Thursday or Friday, it's like, this is now going on 2.5 weeks of a concussion that nobody even knew happened. The Sauce one felt like a little different. It felt like, you know, I don't know. The Reed one was a little concerning if this is going to go on a third week. And the Tittman thing, like, isn't it kind of weird to you? It felt like almost the Izzy injury in the preseason too, where like he got hit and you're like, oh my God. It, like Sal even said on Hard Knocks, he's like, his knee's cooked. After the game, then he was back 2 weeks later. It just feels like if Salah gives you injury news that it's concerning, he's probably back and starting the next week. And if he says he's ready to play, there's a good chance he's getting his last meal before he passes away. Like there's no,
although we have no evidence that Izzy is healed because we haven't seen him.
I was going to say he's in a hyperbolic chamber with Roger somewhere.
I mean, we're in the free Izzy camp. I'm sure you are too.
Oh yeah. I'm an Izzy over Michael Carter guy, not actually over Dalvin Cook, which I know is not a popular take, but Dalvin has looked a little better the last couple weeks. I know he's not prime Dalvin Cook, but at least he looks a little bit more explosive, and they're kind of like, I just would like to see, like, I don't know. Michael Carter doesn't really offer you much outside of like really good memes at this point.
Izzy just has like juice as a runner, which, you know, if you're taking Breece out, you kind of need some of that. Like, they probably don't trust him in protection, but like the offense,
he's not producing.
You need somebody in college, who can get you yards.
In college, that was not his thing. Pass pro and catching the ball was not his thing. But like, I don't know. You can mix Dalvin and Breece, and if you're going to give Izzy some, you know, first down. Maybe a first and second down to spell Breece, and then you kind of bring him back in on third down to use him as a receiver. I don't know. Again, like, I know it's tough. He's like literally just turned 21 years old.
Yeah, he's the youngest guy in the
league. Yeah, he's literally. So, like, I get the concern with running back, but like the fact that Breece is now kind of, we saw it against the Eagles, all of the like, you know, pitch count and like third down, like, he's the number one back and he's their bell cow back now. And now everything is just like spelling him at points. Like, I think, what do you have, five catches on against the Eagles, I believe, or something like that. So yeah, I don't worry about the running back stuff. I just would like to see Izzy get a shot here to maybe, he's got that home run speed that he maybe, you know, we're kind of hoping Mecole Hardman would offer this offense, but he has that 4-2, maybe he could break one or two, you know, over the course of the rest of the year. And that's worth playing him, you know, week in, week out.
Yeah. Well, that just kind of goes back into like this coaching staff, just like, working with the hand behind their back in so many ways. Like, you're playing Randall Cobb slow, Dalvin Cook, who, you know, like you said, he's looked better, but at the same time, like, it just feels like the offense stalls when he's in there, cause he can't get more. Like, I don't even think he's had a carry over 10 yards. Like, and there's not a threat that he's going to burst one. Like, you need guys who are threats. And that's why Xavier Gibson, we have a bunch of questions, so I won't step on it too much, but I just think the staff needs to get their explosive players on the field, cause the offense has not been good. Like, and they should be like, and you'll take a win when you can take it, but some of these wins should have been even bigger than they were. Like, they forced four turnovers and barely, like, you know, beat the Eagles.
They've gotten in the red zone 10 times.
Yeah. They get to the red zone a lot and they never close it out. Yeah.
It's just like, it's there that, and I know sometimes everyone gets on Salah for like coach speak and stuff like that. And like every coach on the NFL does it. You could literally watch a press conference of anyone other than maybe like Nick Sirianni, who, you know, likes himself a lot in front of the camera to be polite. And, you know, they went from they can't move the ball at all to they can now move the ball kind of as much as they want. It's that there's one play per drive And I really believe this. If you go back and watch it, it's always one play per drive. Yeah. It's a bad first down run. It's a penalty. It's a sack. It's a drop. It's a missed read by Zach. Whatever it is, it's a one play drive. And it's, you know, at least they're scoring. But now it's like, even if you converted half those,
yeah,
they blow out the Broncos by I don't even know how many. And honestly, they could have blown the Eagles out if they score some of those touchdowns. It's like, wait, the Jets are winning 24-14, not needing to rely on that. So this is one of those games, especially this stretch here where we talked about them, you know, being a better team, at least on paper. I feel like in all three of those teams, you have to go out and win. But yeah, like, don't let those teams hang around, especially a Giants team where like they're feeling good after scoring two offensive touchdowns in their last 48 drives. Like, that's all great. But if you got to get up on teams early, then you can unleash this pass rush. Then you kind of can like open up the offense. Teams aren't queuing in on Breece Hall 24 times. Zach has more time. It just don't like, why do you have to dig yourself a hole? Why do you have to be down 13-3 at home every game before you kick it in? And then, you know, it's so hard to come back in the NFL. It's like, I don't know. No, I know. I don't hate soccer references, but like if you're down 2-0 in the first 20 minutes, like, why do you have to put yourself in that spot to have this miraculous 3-2 win? Like, just win 3-0. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. You guys already answered one of the questions, which is about Izzy and why he's been playing and all that stuff. But there's plenty of questions, obviously, about the trade deadline, what this team might do. So let's jump in right there. Upstate Jets says, do the Jets make a move on a wide receiver before the trade deadline? And who would you target if you were JD? Will, you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I'll go first on this one. I think they should make a move, whether it's either activating, I know this isn't necessarily it's an internal move, but like I'd love to see them potentially either bring an Irv Charles or a Jason Brownlee in just to be able to move Garrett Wilson around a little bit so he's not pigeonholed to have to play outside. Maybe they can get him some matchups in the slot. If you look outside the organization, Courtland Sutton has familiarity with Hackett. He's only got a year and a half left on his deal. It's relatively cheap money. He's, you know, still in his mid-20s. And obviously still produces. He's more of an above-the-rim guy. Again, allows you to play Garrett Wilson around the formation. It would probably cost you a fourth or a fifth-round pick. I have no interest in Jerry Jeudy for the Jets. I think if you're getting mad at Steve Smith on primetime, you know, if you have one drop here, it doesn't feel like that'd go well. Terrace Marshall's another one, a younger guy, cheaper deal, wouldn't cost you much. Can play inside and outside. The Renfro one's interesting, but like I don't know if he's just not good anymore. It's like kind of hard to tell. I don't know what's going on there. Again, if you want to flip Carl Lawson for Hunter Renfro, they make virtually the same money. Sure. Like that makes sense. I just don't know else. Are you going to trade for Paris Campbell? Like, is that really going to move the needle? So whether it's maybe bringing a guy like a younger guy, like a Brownlee or a Charles just to play 10 reps a game, maybe in the red zone to get Garrett Wilson outside of just having to be a pigeonholed X receiver. That's one option. And again, Sutton, Terrace Marshall, Renfro, the names that make the most sense. As much as Devontae makes a million, so much sense, I just think that's something that happens. If it does happen, you know, it'll happen in around draft time. I don't think that's something that's going to happen now. And I don't see Joe Douglas wanting to part with a first-round pick. If Rodgers was here and playing, I think that was a legit conversation. But yeah, those are the three names I think that are most realistic, at least for right now.
Yeah. I lean towards Joe not trading for one, but I don't know, wouldn't put it past him, I guess. Like the names you mentioned, I wrote something the other day. Those were all listed, and I also put Darnell Mooney and Rashad Bateman because Mooney, the Bears, are kind of a mess, and they're probably going to – I mean, I guess they win the other day?
Yeah, they blew out the Raiders.
Right, they blew out the Raiders are trash.
The backup quarterback game.
And I said Rashad Bateman, just because he's not really like doing, he's not really playing much on the Ravens. I think he's pretty talented. So they have a lot invested in other guys. So there are like guys you could buy low. Like if Terrace Marshall wouldn't cost much, then, you know, bring in another talented guy, see if he can do anything. But if they like Drayson Brownlee, like they said, then I don't know, would you rather Brownlee or Marshall? Because Marshall hasn't really shown anything in the NFL. So yeah, things to consider. Like they need to find something. I think Cobb can't really play more, and you're relying on Xavier Gibson, an undrafted rookie who has one catch. Like I'm a huge fan of his, but he hasn't really shown anything on offense yet as a receiver. So all of a sudden, like this looks like, and we've talked about this, I'm sure you have on yours too, like the receiver room just all of a sudden looks like a weakness now, where I think early in training camp or like they're so deep here, they have so many different things they can do. Corey Davis, Cole Hardman. Now all of a sudden two of those guys are gone. Randall Cobb is playing way more than anybody would have predicted, including the Jets, I think, when they signed him. And now you're relying on a guy that you didn't know, most of the fan base didn't know existed in April. So
yeah, the only other thing too is like, I guess you could counteract it with like just run a ton of 12 personnel with Ruckert and Conklin, and like, and hope that if you just run Lazard and Wilson out there, and like Ruckert and Conklin, Conklin offers you enough. He's probably the second best receiver route runner on this team, which I just feel like that's maybe the only other solution is you just go to this heavy kind of 12 personnel package. You run out of it. You lean on Breece, and then you hope that Lazard, you know, and Garrett Wilson are enough to get the job done. And Gibson every, you know, 12th play makes a play. But yeah, I love Xavier Gibson. It's really, it's an interesting story, and it does make sense to prioritize keeping him over a guy like Mecole Hardman, just because he's theoretically under contract for 4 more years on really cheap money, and he's younger and homegrown, et cetera. But like, he has 3 total touches on the year. Like maybe let's pump the brakes on like future superstar. He might be, but like let's let him a couple targets first before we start going too far.
Well, and I should say, and we'll answer the question Tim put on the thing in a second, but like the Jets have been using the "we traded Mecole away because Xavier emerged," but as you mentioned, as we just talked about, like he's played 10 snaps a game and he has one catch and 2 carries. Like it's not like you're using him. Like Randall Cobb took what the role that they wanted to give Mecole Hardman, but they're not saying anything about that because Randall Cobb has been literally the least productive receiver in the NFL.
Don't you feel like that? I talked about this. It's such a hard way to like operate with Cobb, because I think if there's a way to approach it that he could, you like go and talk to him and be like, listen, you're going to play like 10 snaps a game. We'll use you more in the red zone and like once in a while, but like you can't totally botch that relationship knowing that he is like probably the most veteran person like that's around the team day to day. And he's Rodgers' best friend. And like, I know people don't want to hear this, but if he's coming back this year and he's obviously coming back next year, maybe another year, who knows? You can't like do what Green Bay did a lot of to what Rodgers, where like he felt like they were going behind his back. They weren't. It's a really difficult decision of like telling a veteran you don't have it anymore. It's one of the worst, I think one of the worst parts about being a coach, especially a younger coach, where like this guy, you need him bought in, but you know he's not going to play as much. I just find that conversation, I think, something that we don't talk about enough, of like, how do you tell Randall Cobb, hey, we're kind of benching you, but we need you to be bought in because we're going to need you at one point this year, and we don't know when, but we're going to need you at something for some reason.
Well, I'm sure just what happens is they still play him, just not as much. Maybe everything I've heard is that their plan is to play Gibson more from Cobb snaps, especially on third down. I think you'll see Gibson a lot more. I don't know. We'll see if they follow through with it, or if Hackett, you know, if Gibson makes a mistake, does he just turn to Cobb again? Like, I don't know. But at I Wrench asked, any possibility of Corey Davis coming back? I haven't heard anything on the Corey Davis front, including like particularly why he left. I don't think he's really told anybody necessarily, but I don't see that happening. But though they do miss Corey Davis all of a sudden, which is funny because he's another guy at the fan base I feel like underappreciated over the years.
Corey Davis was the classic, needed to like get 3 mistakes out of his system in the first quarter, and you'd be so mad, and then would come up with these huge like catches in the fourth quarter. The Minnesota game, yeah, I think he had like 2 illegal formation penalties and a drop in the first quarter, and you're like, dude, you got to be like, you can't be serious. You're false starting as a receiver over and over again. And then the fourth down, Mike White, you know, infamous throw, it's like amazing catch. So,
and he had the touchdown against the Browns too.
Yeah, it's just like, it doesn't make any sense, but it'd be interesting to see. Like, I just don't feel like the Corey Davis thing, there'll be a piece in 12 months of like, there's definitely something way more serious than I think people I just don't think you fall out of love with football enough to walk away from $15 million. Like, maybe I'm shameless with that, but like, I just feel like there was something going on there that,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird one for sure.
Back to the point on Cobb, I feel like if there's anybody who could handle that conversation about like, we want you bought in, but
it's Rodgers
time, it's him, right? It's Cobb. Yeah. Like, he almost retired last year and he came back, and I feel like he came back to be around the guys, right? Like, that's part of it, is like wanting to be in the locker room and being with his buddy and all that stuff. I feel like he's one guy who could handle it. All right, this one from Dan Bow 76. Who's the most approachable in the locker room this year? And who are you most afraid to approach, and why? Is it Michael Clemens?
Oh, man. Okay.
Go ahead, Zach.
So one answer we have to mention who you had on your pod is Tyler Conklin. He's pretty openly campaigned for the media good guy of the year. He's like even mentioned it. He's like, I'm trying to win that. And so he's
who won that
like,
last year? I'm trying to remember.
It was Sheldon Rankins.
That's right.
Like Sheldon Rankins, the GOAT.
He was a go-to guy in the locker room for sure. I'm trying to think, who are some other good ones who are the most approachable? DJ Reed's always very approachable. Jermaine Johnson's one of the few guys that just like always at his locker, to the point. And I kind of fell back because last year I didn't really talk to him that much, but he was always at his locker.
Lakin's another one. Lakin Thomas Lakin's is another good. One.
Yeah. Lakin's at his locker a lot. I base it around like guys who are even just like at their locker, and then if they're willing to talk a lot, which most of the guys are, but some sometimes aren't. In terms of, I wouldn't say I'm afraid to approach anybody, though I definitely don't go up to Michael Clemens often. And I would say Billy Turner is another one that nobody really talks to because he kind of has a vibe that he doesn't really want to talk to anybody. And he sometimes will like put on loud music as we're like in a press conference thing with like 5 feet away, but you know, to each their own. But yeah, so those off the top of my head, I feel like I'm missing somebody in terms. Oh, Xavier Gibson's also very approachable, and he's just like a really like nice kid. They have a pretty good locker room, honestly. Like there's not like any bad apples in there, I would say. Everybody's pretty nice or has personality. Like even Garrett Wilson, you can go up to if you have like a question. We've talked about on here, he often will be like, I got to go walk my dog. And then he leaves. and he's less available this year, I would say, than in the past, probably because he's just become like a bigger deal, but very approachable. Sauce approachable. Like all their best players are pretty approachable guys, which is cool.
And Clemens, like, yeah, he's an intimidating presence, but he gives you those one-liners, right? Like,
yeah.
A chance. Although I guess a lot of those come from the podium. Rare occasion.
Last year there was a game. I forget what game it was. I think he like had a big force fumble or something like that. And so we talked to him in the locker room after the game. And
here's the Green Bay game.
Yeah, that's right. And he was like trying to figure out what to say. And he like would like laugh at a question because he didn't know like how he would. And then he would just say like one line and that would be all we needed kind of thing. He's a character, man. I think he's kind of flown under the radar a little. I think he missed the last game, actually. Solid didn't mention him this week, so I don't know. We'll see what that means practice wise, but yeah, he's a fun one.
All right, next question, and this one's kind of like just the elephant. This one had to pop up at some point, so let's just throw it in here. NY Jets fan Mike, here's my question for Zach. Any chance that Rodgers actually returns this season?
I mean, chance, yes. I think even he's tried to temper the expectations a little bit because I think it's gotten a little out of whack, probably because he talks once a week and he talked again last night on the Manning cast. He's made amazing progress, but there's still like a lot of steps between now and like him actually being on the field, taking hits. You know, if there's anybody that could go against the doctor's wishes, it would maybe be him. I can't imagine a doctor would fully clear him in time for what? So if he doesn't come back in December, it would be January when there's like two or three games left. That's probably the best case scenario. Maybe the playoffs if they make it, but like then there's the whole dilemma of like, are you really going to take Zach out and like put in a quarterback who runs a more complicated style of quarterbacking? I don't know.
Ruining Zach for good. Right? Like he leads this team to the playoffs, and then you bench him. Yeah. I mean,
so I don't know. There's a lot of factors. I'm still skeptical to a degree, but with each passing like update and watching him on the field, like I definitely like. I feel like I don't know if I maybe put 20%, like 20% chance he comes back, which is pretty high considering it's Achilles injury for a 39-year-old. And there's also the factor of like he's gonna have to weigh whether he wants to risk it too. Like if you come back too early, like that's a part that people are forgetting. Like if he comes back too early and he gets hit the wrong way, like that could be the end. So I that's why I'm still skeptical, while open, more open to the possibility than in week one, when I'm like, well, his season's over, the Jet season is over, and that, we're back to normal.
That Christmas Eve game, I know I keep saying it, like, it's not, it's just, it feels like there's so much momentum of, like, there's that three game stretch there where it's like their last, it's their last home game, and there's just something about that, like, I think Rodgers likes to do this thing where he, like, hints at something, and then everybody talks about it, and then he plays it down, and then he wants to be the one to say he's coming back. He did that with the trade. It was like, yeah, I want to be moved. I want to go to the Jets. And then he, like, wouldn't talk about it. And he's like, let's temper the expectations. Nothing's happened yet. And it's like, dude, you just said you're going to the Jets. Like, we're going to talk about it. And then, you know, and then he was like, no, I'm the one going to the Jets. Like, it's just kind of one of those things he does. But there was a video that, for everyone went viral with him throwing. There was a video of him after walking off the field where he literally jumps off his other foot and, like, lands on both feet. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, if you start to see him, I think we'll know where they're at post this three game stretch. Cause if they're really 6-3, look, you can, the way Zach's playing, I know he's made progress. You would bench Zach 100 times. Zach would bench himself 100 times over 100 for Rodgers, let alone whether he's playing well or not. The Jets are kind of doing exactly the perfect recipe for Rodgers to come back if he want, like, if he's able to, though, where it's like the defense is playing awesome, the skill guys you like a lot, the offensive line's getting better, the coaching's seemingly kind of figuring it out. It's like everything's pointing to him in a much better situation even than maybe week one. And then it's like Zach's playing well enough to kind of hold the fort down, not turning it over. But other than the Chiefs game, Zach's not exactly throwing for 350 and six touchdowns a game, right? So it's like, I don't know. I don't know if he'll actually come back, but there's just this weird thing where, like, I feel like it's initially he hinted at it, and now it's like watching him actually, like, throw a football and, like, transfer weight and doing these other things. It just feels like there's a lot more realisticness, I guess, to it. There was a CBS doctor. I don't know if he works for, I don't know what the deal was. And again, who knows if this guy knows what he's talking about, but he said that the way Rodgers at, like, where he's at, he's at week 13 or 14 already of his rehab based on what he's doing. And if it keeps following this timeline, technically week 15 would be like the 9-month mark for what Rodgers is at. I just don't know how much I don't know. It's cool that we're even talking about it, though. It is. Yeah, I think there's like the optimism. I asked Conklin. Well,
it's like the carrot. It's like a carrot on a stick. Like,
yeah, I said,
it's good podcast content.
I said, do you guys think about this at all in the locker room of, like, this guy that was supposed to save us this year and lead us to a title might actually come back? He's like, we don't think about it. And in my head, I'm like, nah, they're thinking about it. The fact that he's even out there, they're like, yo, if we get close here, like, is he going to come back and lead us to a title? I don't know. We'll see. I'll put it at 40% just to be more optimistic. But if they win the next three and he's starting to jog or, like, getting close to running by then, you're like, all right, now we have, like, a real conversation. Is, like, this really going to happen?
I can't wait for him to release a real video on social of, like,
he's doing
with
a doc,
the Rocky
right?
music and, like,
isn't he doing
whole...
a doc?
I think people think they are because there's, like, extra cameras that have been following him around, apparently. So
yeah, and he's been tagging a photographer in a lot of the pictures on his Instagram too. I noticed that, like, they're definitely, like, professional shots. So of course there's a doc. Everybody saw Jason Kelsey's doc, and now they're like, all right,
yeah. Well, and there's also the Last Dance thing, and LeBron has been having a film crew follow him. Like, they're all doing it now.
Yeah. All right. Next one's from the chat, from Cameron McLaurin. Do you think Becton will make a stink about moving back to right tackle when Brown comes back? Salah's best five comment makes this sound inevitable.
Oh man. Well, it's a very interesting thing. I lean towards them not, like, messing things up, while also I know how much Salah and the coaching staff likes and values Dwayne Brown. And if Dwayne's like, I'm not doing anything other than left tackle, like, I don't know if he would do that or not, but he has never played another position before, and he's as old as Aaron Rodgers, a guy who's never played. Yeah. So I don't really have a great prediction for how it's going to go, especially because they have so many other moving parts in the offensive line right now. A Tippmann injured, like, can Brown play guard? Like, Jason Peters played guard later in his career.
I was just going to say that Jason Peters had never played guard, and he just, like, stepped in last year and did it.
Yeah. And it would be hard sell, especially with this fan base, to move Mekhi Becton. I don't think he's been as good as the perception. I think he's been, you know, good though, and he's gotten better as the season has gone. I think he has, like, those huge blocks and those highlight reel ones that get highlighted by, like, Brian Baldinger. But he also, like, has some misses throughout the game, but he is very inexperienced is another key part of that. But the talent is obviously there. I would probably keep him at left tackle and either experiment with Dwayne at right tackle or right guard, or just like have Dwayne be the backup until or unless somebody else gets hurt, because you assume somebody will at some point. Like, ultimately, they have to decide if the best five thing is what he means, then maybe that does lead to Mekhi to the right tackle, because I feel like Mekhi and Dwayne you're probably feel better about than Mekhi and Max Mitchell, at least the coaching staff would. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting spot. I know the fan base is very much soured on Dwayne Brown, and I get it based on, like, you know, what happened those first couple weeks, but I don't know. This team loves Dwayne Brown. He's still around the team. He could have, again, retired if he wanted to, and he's still here. So I have a hard time thinking they wouldn't put him back on the field, but I don't really feel like confident that he's going to be a starter right away either. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play it.
Yeah. I just wouldn't like mess with the kind of, they have looked a lot better the last few weeks. I know they gave up some sacks last week. They've played, I think, the one thing you can defend Brown is he came off zero training camp and by PFF metrics faced the hardest matchups of anybody in the NFL the first 2 weeks. So, like, maybe he'd be better. But at the same time, Mekhi's looked much better. He feels like he's gotten better each week. Lincoln Tomlinson's playing by far the best football he's played as a Jet. And I don't think it's a surprise that it's next to Becton. I feel like they've kind of – there was a stunt the Eagles ran, and, like, the Jets have been horrible at picking up stunts for, like, 12 years. And, like – not only did Mekhi pass it off well, but Lincoln, full pancake. Like, I was like, wait, did they just pick up a stunt and flatten somebody? This is, you know, this is very unique for a Jets, you know, offensive line. So I don't know, maybe roll with it this week. If they look really good this week,
or yeah, you can't good, change it. Yeah.
You gotta I don't know. Mekhi hasn't been durable his whole career. Maybe, like, there's a chance he could get hurt, or Max Mitchell has gotten banged up pretty much, you know, his entire time here. Who knows? And, you know, it really depends on Tippmann, because if Tippmann comes back, I don't, even if it's not next week or something, the best five is pretty clearly, like, involving Tippmann, Becton, and Tomlinson. McGovern, I think, is by far their biggest issue on the offensive line. But
yeah, I think Lakin's been better than the fans. Like, fans don't talk about him when they don't hear
because he makes a lot of money. It's the same thing with CJ Mosley, right?
Like, well, it's funny. I don't think we mentioned his name all of training camp.
Yeah,
which is great.
It's just like there, right?
Yeah,
like,
I think he. Yeah, it really is. It always winds up coming down to, like, where a guy's drafted and money. And I do think about with, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later in the week. I always think about Leonard Williams at that, because I feel like he's a guy that's been pigeonholed because of both his draft position and his and the money he's made. But I think in terms of, like, just being an NFL player, he's, like, a very good NFL defensive lineman. And one of the few picks I think the Jets, you could argue, got right. I think fans hated on him when he was here because he wasn't getting sacks. I think he's kind of, like, gotten a little bit back to that with the Giants, where he's getting a lot of pressure, but no sack. I just think he's a solid defensive tackle. And so I think sometimes you have to remove what you're paying a guy and what they were drafted. And
I don't know. Like, why does it bother everybody so much how much these guys get paid?
It's a very good point. Yeah.
CJ Mosley's been awesome here for a long time now, and he's good every year. He plays every game.
And is he supposed to say no when they offer him? You know what they offer him?
Like, it's we're going to restructure your contract and front load you $21 million. That's going to balloon your cap number in 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You can be mad at Mike Maccagnan, but, like, also, where would this team be without CJ Mosley? He's like as much of a leader
been incredible
as Rodgers was. And
yeah,
just, like, leadership, like, Quincy Williams, like, basically shadowed him for the last year to learn from it. Like, Quincy would not be as good as he is without CJ Mosley. Like, I think
first,
he'd appreciate
it. 2 years ago, CJ Mosley is like, yo, you're running here. He's like, okay. That's literally how it went. And, like, I don't know. I never understood that. Like, I understand the contract, even, like, Lincoln, like, was not good last year. Like, by any metric, he was not a good player last year. He's durable, but, like, wasn't good. He was making a lot of money. I understand Brandon Scherff was better, but, like, I don't know. At this point, I'm not telling everyone how to, you know, obviously it's a cap sport and whatever, but
yeah,
I don't know. CJ Uzomah is by far their third best tight end, and he makes almost double digit millions of dollars a year. He's on the books for $11 million next year.
Yeah. That's Joe Douglas's fault for giving that much money to a blocking tight end. It's not.
Yeah. Who's not that good at blocking.
Like, it's not his fault. He's not what they paid for necessarily. Like, that's the thing. Like, I get being frustrated with players, and when a guy doesn't play well, I get criticized, because I don't think Lakin played well last year either. But the money part shouldn't be a part of the criticism. And I get it. Like, it's, as people are saying, like, there's a salary cap, which is why, like, okay, we're paying this guy this much money. Why isn't he amazing? But I don't know. Sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. You pay what you're off. You take the contract you're offered. Like, you're not going to ask for less money. But like, I don't think I deserve that.
Yeah, so. I'm just saying this year, like, I still see people like CJ's overpaid. I'm like, dude, like, what? He's really good. He's an All-Pro last year, and he's on one of the three or four best defense in the NFL, and he's probably going to be an All-Pro again this year. And he's like, I've said this for a while now. CJ Mosley is like one or two All Pros from being potential Hall of Fame guy, and like he's the guy around the league. Like he was one of the first names that came here and has been good, and was like really well respected around the league. And people were like, "Oh, he took the money," but now he's kind of embodied the Jets kind of culture. I feel like everything revolves around CJ. I know Rodgers this year, obviously, it's much more about Aaron. But
defensively, yeah,
defensively, like CJ's the heartbeat of that team. Like that peanut punch he had on. You know, against the Eagles, like that's his picture perfect. He's going to play linebacker in the NFL. Like literally read that play perfectly and just punched the ball out with a clean left hook. That was pretty awesome. And he talks a lot of trash, by the way, which I did not realize.
Well, him and Quincy are a great like pair in terms of their skills too. Like they just work very well together.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, what else you got, Tim?
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, looking ahead to this week's game and the Giants, we got a Giants question sneaking in here. Who gives the Giants a better chance to win right now, or I guess from the Jets' perspective, a worse chance to win right now, Daniel Jones or Tyrod Taylor? Will, you want to go first?
Yeah. So this is one of those questions where I understand the reason why people are going to say Tyrod. I feel like Tyrod gets the ball a little quicker. His pocket presence is a little bit better. He's a little more slippery in the pocket. He's not really a good runner, and he's more willing to take shots. Like, he's one of those guys that's elusive in the pocket, not necessarily a good runner. Daniel Jones obviously hurts you with his legs, and at times he did pretty well against a bad Jets team 4 years ago. But, you know, he's got these moments where he looks like a pretty good NFL quarterback. The only reason I'm going to say, like, Tyrod, the Jets have just done really well against Tyrod, and the last 2 years they've played him in the preseason and, like, knocked Tyrod out of a game in the first quarter. And I don't know if it's mental, but like if I'm Tyrod Taylor and I'm in my mid 30s, I'm like, dude, I do not want to play this defensive line to get hit. They seem to kill me. So I guess right now Tyrod gives them the best chance, but like I'd still rather also face Tyrod if I'm the Jets. I just feel like they've played him so many times. They've beaten him for the last couple of years. It just doesn't feel like it's necessarily I know he's looked better. They've scored two offensive touchdowns the last 2 weeks. It's not like, I don't know. I just don't feel like it's one of those either option. I think it's a great matchup for the Jets. But I guess Tyrod's not going to run as much, and the Jets sometimes do struggle with running quarterbacks. So I'll go with that.
Yeah. The thing with Daniel Jones, he was better last year than I thought he would be, but he's very much a guy that Zach Wilson in some respect, but I think he has more physical talent than Zach. He needs everything around him to be good in order for him to be good. Like, he's not a guy that's going to elevate around him. And, you know, he's getting paid like somebody who should probably be able to elevate. But you also, if you have a quarterback you believe in, you have to pay him that much. So I don't think the contract's as big of a deal as it's maybe being made, even though he's having a bad year this year. Their offensive line is an absolute disaster. And so their offensive, like, Jets fans, I think, should appreciate what they have weirdly with their offensive line, because it could be worse. The Giants have dealt with injuries. Andrew Thomas is better than anybody the Jets have on the O-line, but he's been injured. Evan Neal's been a disaster. They drafted John DeMichael Smith. I don't think he was looking great before he got hurt. I know Jets fans wanted him over Joe Tippmann at a certain point in training camp.
Not this Jets fan.
Yeah. I mean, they have guys like Marcus McKethan and Josh Azudu, like all these guys who are playing. In
Azudu might be the worst offensive line in football. Yeah, I feel bad because he's a mid-round pick playing as a rookie. Yeah. But, like, good God.
He's rough. Justin Pugh, he had shirts made of straight off the couch or whatever because he came off the couch and started at left tackle or whatever for them. Like, their offensive line's a disaster. Their receivers, they have some talent, but it's a bunch of, like, slot receivers and Jalen Hyatt. And I'm not really high in any of their receivers. Hyatt maybe has some potential, but, like, Darren Waller's the only one that really scares you a little bit, but they haven't even really used him very well. So anyway, we just kind of went down a rabbit hole there. But my point being, like, Daniel Jones is more talented than Tyrod, but I think Daniel needs more around him to succeed, whereas maybe Tyrod is a veteran, a little smarter. But yeah, to Will's point, I don't think either of them necessarily scare the Jets, because if you can get some pressure on Daniel Jones, and this defensive line should absolutely feast on that O-line, whether it's Daniel, I imagine Daniel won't play. I could be wrong. He hasn't been clear for contact as of this recording on Tuesday. Daniel's like Zach Wilson, where if he's getting pressured, he's having trouble. So if they're getting pressure on him, like, again, this is probably going to be another one of those low scoring games. Like, I would generally take the under on Jets games this year, I would say. Although Vegas does a really good job of picking the lines where you're, like, right on the edge of, oh man, that's exactly what the number I was thinking. Like, why did I have to make that the over under? But, yeah, I think Daniel Jones probably gives them a better chance to win, but I don't think it's necessarily by a lot.
I know this is the Jets' formula to win games on defense, but, like, this is, like, the most prototypical rush with four. CJ and Quincy have really good eyes and tackle well, and, like, they figure it out. Like, if they just prevent the big play from the Giants and you contain Barkley, who had his worst NFL game ever 4 years ago, like, Jamal Adams, literally, that game was 13 carries for 1 yard, and that was – it was crazy, but, like – if you limit Barkley and limit any big plays from the Giants, like, you're going to get home with four and you're going to cause pressure and a turnover. Like, this is very much discipline eyes. Like, sometimes the Jets rush lanes, I don't know if you guys noticed this too, like, early on in games, they, like, get so overly aggressive that they just overrun everything. If they can just, like, rush the way they designated rush lanes the way they're supposed to, you're going to get home with Tyrod and Daniel Jones, and it's gonna, whoever it's gonna be, a quarterback, it's gonna be a pretty long day. Chase Young had a couple of sacks on Sunday. That was like Bryce Huff would might have gotten there quicker than the big Chase Young.
All right, let's finish up real quick with some short, fun ones. This one coming off last week when we talked about Zach's pizza tour from Edward Nylander. Hey, Zach, in town for the game. Three pizza spots for me. I assume near. I mean, you can't really
say. Yeah, so
near.
That's the thing. Stadium, so there wasn't a specific, like, about location.
Maybe in
so.
Jersey. How about that? On that side of the river.
Yeah, we can. Okay, if it's in Jersey, then. I also don't know if he has his car. Is he Ubering? But I would say I'm going to give more than three. So there's a place called Star Tavern. I've never been. It's supposed to be amazing. It's in Orange, New Jersey. It's like people have called it like the best pizza, like, slice in Jersey. Raza in Jersey City. It's hard to get a reservation, but if you can, very good. There's a place called Rizzo in Jersey City, which has huge thin slices, which are amazing. It's like a little hole in the wall spot. And there's a spot near MetLife, if you're staying in East Rutherford, called Natoli's, Natoli apostrophe S. The Giants used to give that to us on Fridays when I covered them, and it's pretty good. So those are in Hoboken. There's a place called Napoli's, which I very much like too. I don't know if Will knows any pizza.
Yeah, Jersey. I can't really help you with Jersey. Yeah. I can help you with Long Island and Westchester, but I assume if you're going to the game, you're probably not staying in Westchester. If you are, Johnny's Pizza, it's like on the border of of Pelham and Mount Vernon. It's a Portnoy special. It's got like a 9-1 or 9-2 thin crust pizza, but yeah. You're not going to really go wrong. Just stay away from, like, chain places and you'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. There's good pizza.
And when in doubt, Sparrow's, right?
Yeah, of course.
A real New York slice right there. Yeah.
A real New York slice.
And if you are in Jersey City for one of those spots, make sure you stop by Zach's house.
we'll put my address in the description. Yeah.
All right, one last question to finish things off. This one came in through Twitter. How many Connors does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Well, I imagine more than one, because I can't imagine he can do
it. I wasn't going to use this. Zach, you sent it to me, so I said, all right.
It's from at Brian Sternbeck, like, so we should give him a shout out. Yeah, I would say probably more than one Connor, because I can't imagine he can do any activity on his own. So,
yeah, we got two Jets Connors, so makes it makes
that's
it a
true. Easy. But everyone on this pod knows we.
Everybody
mean
knows who we're talking.
I know.
About.
I know who you're talking about.
Oh, somebody mentioned Bazile, artichoke Bazile's in Hoboken, which is pretty good too.
Which have gone.
Now
which,
I'm starving. Now I'm literally
artichokes
starving.
Artichokes have grown too. They're all over the place.
Yeah, they're all over. Yeah.
There was one when I lived in Park Slope. There was one right around. It was dangerous. It was literally like a 12-second walk from me. It was around the corner. The crazy thing there is the slice, which their slices are so big.
Huge, yeah.
And they're still just $5, which by New York standards, anywhere else in the country, they'll be like $5 for
a slice. Exactly,
pizza.
Yeah.
But by New York standards, like that size of slice, I was always very impressed.
I mean, I think Joe's is for a slice these days. The price has gone up of pizza. It's crazy.
It used to be a nice slice. Yeah, I was going to say that, or like, I don't know, by me growing up, it was always like, oh, your mom gave you $5 going to like after school, I could get two slices of pizza and a garlic and a soda.
Or in a soda, just, right? Yeah.
A nice canned soda.
When I worked, I don't remember the name of it. When I worked in Chelsea Market, up the street, there was a pizza place and their lunch special was $5, two slices of cheese and a soda drink. And I'm like, I don't know how they stayed in, I guess they didn't stay in business, but the rent, especially in that area, it like in Chelsea, good. Like, whew. But anyway. All right. Hey, Will, thanks so much for coming and joining us today, man. We appreciate it. Keep up all the good work on your own pod.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. It was a lot of fun.
We got comments saying we should have you on more. So
all right, yeah,
I don't know if that's a shot at us, but it's definitely a compliment.
We'll go with the positive. We're coming out of the bye. We're positive. We're just gonna roll with the positive stuff. Yeah, glass half full until Sunday, probably at 2:30 if the game's tied. People are calling for all of our jobs.
All right, we'll be back with a full Giants preview later in the week. Make sure you tune back in for that one. For Will and Zach, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for joining the Can't Wait podcast.